Francisco Lindor hit his 30th home run of the season as the New York Mets took down the Boston Red Sox. Can he make a late push for NL MVP? We'll talk about that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Wednesday, September 4th. I'm Lindsey Crosby. He's Christian Rau. Thanks for being here with us, like you guys always are. Okay, not a full slate of action yesterday, but still some really interesting storylines out of these 13 games that were played, Christian. But I want to start with the New York Mets and the Boston Red Sox. Mets go into yesterday's matchups half a game behind the Atlanta Braves for the final spot in the NL wildcard. And they take down the Boston Red Sox 7-2. Francisco Lindor, this wasn't the winning run, but he did this.
And Lindor gets one in the air to right field. O'Neill back near the wall. It's out of here. Francisco Lindor strikes again, his 30th home run of the season. The fifth time in Lindor's career, he's reached 30 home runs. He continues his MVP charge, and he gives the Mets a 2-0 lead in the third.
Okay, so continues his MVP charge is kind of what they say in there. With Shohei Ohtani not only getting 40-40, but on pace for 50-50, I think we're in agreement that Lindor probably doesn't win the MVP this year. He gets down ballot votes. He probably finishes second or third, right? But I think my question is this. Is this potentially the best position player season in Mets history?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that might be the case. Yeah. This is what, his fifth season hitting 30 home runs? Yes. I know that's incredible, by the way.
It's his fifth 30 homer season in his career. He's tied with Ernie Banks for second most among primary shortstops. So more than half your games at short. The only guy who did it more was Alex Rodriguez, had 7 at shortstop. And Lindor's one of only 6 switch hitters to have 5 30 homer seasons. Listen to this list: Mickey Mantle, Mark Teixeira, Chipper Jones, Lance Berkman, and Eddie Murray. Like, it's pretty good air there.
Yeah, that's a heck of a list right there, being in that kind of names. And Lindor fits right in. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Who would you put in comparison with Lindor as a possibility for best Mets season ever? I mean, I would think that he's got to be up there.
It's right now, it's probably top 3 for me, right? So 273 batting average with an 843 OPS, 30 homers, 26 stolen bases. He's obviously on pace for 30-30 here. He'd be, I think, the 8th player in history to have back-to-back 30-30 seasons. And he leads the NL with 7.2 F-War. But the other two seasons I'm thinking about, Carlos Beltran in 2006. He batted 275 with an OPS just under 1,000. Hit 41 homers, stole 18 bases, won a Silver Slugger and a Gold Glove in center field. Now, he only played 140 games, had a minor leg injury, and I think that kind of probably what stops him from taking the number one spot, but I've got that in there. And then the very next year, David Wright in 2007, 30-30 year, batted 325, OPS was, I'm doing math in my head real quick, 962. 30 homers, 34 steals, 107 RBI, won a Silver Slugger, and a Gold Glove at third base. So, and that was a 4-season stretch for David Wright where he had a batting average over 300, a slug over 500, and an OPS over 900, like all 4 of those years. So, like, I've got it right up there with those two. I think he can probably overtake Beltran if he gets the 30-30, maybe pushes a little farther. And by war, 7.2 war, again, he leads Ohtani by like a full, like, Ohtani's at 6.2, so it's a little wild. But it feels like this is top 3 already in Mets history.
That's a good point. And you're talking about Beltran with having 140 games. Well, that's about right where Lindor is right now. So if you compare their seasons together, Beltran clears most definitely. But I think you're right, Lindor will probably wind up being the better season once it's all said and done. Man, we don't talk about David Wright enough. That's what you did. That's really what I just got from that takeaway. Lindor, what upsets me, Lindsay, is that, you know, his WAR is higher because of the position he plays compared to Ohtani. Yeah, sure, got you. But imagine where Lindor would be if he actually would have started the season off not in the position that he did, because he started off really rough, and now he's, you know, being in consideration to being the runner-up of the MVP. If he started off strong, I don't think it would be a runner-up conversation.
I think having a strong finish can take him from third. He's considered to be behind Ozuna right now because Ozuna's in contention for a Triple Crown. I think if he were to start to finish strong, that moves him from third to second. But I think he'd be contending to go from second to first if he wasn't slow. And I've got that as soon as my baseball reference loads here. I've got that stat. He started off in the month of March and April, 29 games. He batted 197 with a 639 OPS. But since then, he's pretty much gotten better every single month. His batting average dipped actually to 274 for the month of July, but he also hit 9 homers in the month. So, like, it's been a very good, and also I believe he's played every single game this year. So, like, that's the posting. That is definitely something. And like you said, at a defensive position versus Ohtani just being the DH, but that's not the only, I think, big takeaway from this game too, because you could see how this team could make a postseason run if they can get in. David Peterson won his 9th game. He's now 9-1. Quality start, 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 2 11 strikeouts. I believe it was his birthday too. I think it's his 29th birthday. So he did that on his birthday. And like, so you could see a postseason rotation of Luis Severino, Sean Manea, David Peterson. Like, you can see how you've got that. You've got some hot hitters, whether it's Pete Alonso potentially getting hot, Mark Vientos. You've got Lindor, obviously. If Alvarez can get going in the postseason, you can see how they have the pieces to make a run. Your bullpen has Garrett, Diaz when he's not blowing stuff. You went out and got Stanek at the deadline, Ryan Stanek from the Astros. I think it's from the Astros. You've got a lot of pieces here. And so I could see how they could make a run if they can get in.
Yeah, and they're finding a way to do it right now, right? They're having the best winning streak in all of baseball. Is up to 6 games now, so they have a 6-game winning streak, and they're right behind the Atlanta Braves. In the first one to fall in a game, they're going to switch. Like, that's how close this final wild card spot is. And they took care of Boston yesterday, and Boston is one of those teams that are right in contention for the postseason as well. Now they're falling and they're slipping, and it's unfortunate. Boston has one of the toughest schedules in September.
They really do.
So that's something to keep in mind. But Sean Manea has been really interesting. Severino has been very interesting. Manea is expected to opt out of his deal with the Mets in the offseason. That's how good his season has been.
Yeah, and Severino's on a 1-year. So you could lose both these guys after the year. You kind of have to, if you get in the postseason, you kind of got to ride these guys because you may not get them back.
What's exciting to me and what's surprising, would you have ever had this on your bingo card, Lindsay, that the Mets pitching rotation this year would be what is helping them possibly get into the postseason with not having Senga have pitched more than what, 10 innings?
Six innings. He came out in that 6th inning against Atlanta.
So could you imagine, like, I did not have that whatsoever, but the fact that Manea is stepping up, Severino is doing what he's doing, it's just really impressive. So I you got to love what the Mets are doing. I mean, I know you don't have to love it, Lindsay, but
the Braves guy, yeah.
It is quite impressive.
It is, and it's going to be a fun race down the stretch. We'll definitely be talking more about the NL wild card race down the stretch. Let's stick in the NL East, though. The Atlanta Braves take down the Colorado Rockies 3-0. That in itself is not quite surprising. Atlanta now is tied with Philly for most shutouts in MLB this season. I think they have 14. Mm-hmm. But Chris Sale collects his 200th strikeout in this game. He now has 206, which leads MLB because Dylan Cease hasn't pitched yet. These guys are probably going to flip-flop back and forth depending on who's pitching that specific day. But here's what's wild to me. The history of the Atlanta Braves. I'll remind you, this is the oldest continually operating baseball franchise in MLB. Okay? Chris Sale is the first left-handed pitcher in team history to record 200 strikeouts in a season. The previous record, Tom Glavine had 192 strikeouts in 1991. So in the long and tenured and rich history of the Atlanta Braves, he literally did something that no one else has ever done, which is just amazing to me that that was even available to be out there. So I think my question is this: can Chris Sale win the Triple Crown, and does he already have the Cy Young locked up?
I think he has the Cy Young locked up. As much as I think that Zach Wheeler has had a great second half of his season, really he's had a great all season. I think he wound up being the runner up. I just don't think he can catch Chris Sale. Sale has just been incredible. Yeah, I think the Triple Crown is likely. I think he could totally do it. He's leading in 206 strikeouts. I think he's got the most wins by how many now? He just passed Tarek Skubal of the AL. I know that. And then
they are tied at 16. They are tied at 16.
Okay, they're tied at 16. Yeah, that's interesting. I think he could totally do it. Now, the biggest thing to me is that we keep talking about this rotation of Sale and Lopez and Morton and Fried doing all these things that the history of the Atlanta Braves have never done before. Like, this is multiple times that we've talked about the Braves rotation doing something this season that has never been done in Braves history. And you talk about the amazing legends that have pitched for the Braves, and they're doing it all without Spencer Strider as well. Like, this is incredible what the Braves are doing this year. And it's all because of the amazing resurgence of Chris Sale. The Braves fans better be sending a nice bottle of wine and maybe a nice gift card to your local Boston Red Sox fan, because they handed them an absolute stud.
The wildest thing for me is that not only did Atlanta get Chris Sale in a straight up trade for Vaughn Grissom, Boston's paying his salary this year.
Insane.
Atlanta immediately extended Chris Sale for one additional season, which lowered the average annual value of the deal, which meant that all of the money Boston was sending covered exactly what Chris Sale's salary was this year. So Atlanta is spending zero of their own dollars to employ Chris Sale this year, and they're going to get a Cy Young out of it. By the way, if Skubal and Sale keep up these paces, this will be the first season in MLB history where a left-handed pitcher won the Triple Crown in both the AL and the NL.
Wow.
It's never happened before.
That's impressive. You know, one last thing about Sale, I will say this. I listened to his post-game last night. He doesn't care about this award. I'm sure in the back of his mind he does, but when you talk about him sitting on the podium, all he cares about is the Braves making the postseason. He is a true team guy, and you can tell he really likes where he's at in Atlanta. So, mm-hmm. You got to be really pumped up if you're a Braves fan, knowing that Chris Sale's in your rotation, and it probably is not going to be for the only year. I think you're going to get him for a few more seasons.
Yeah, you've got at least one more guaranteed. You have a club option after that. At this rate, you're definitely going to pick that up. And I honestly think he could be the new version of Charlie Morton, where you have a sequence of 1 year deals and you may just bring him back until he decides he's done. I mean, I don't know how long he's going to pitch for. He might pitch through 38. He might pitch through 40. He might pitch through 37 and be done the next time he wins a World Series. But I feel like this could be a situation where you just have Chris Sale until he retires, because he's talked about he loves it here so much. Okay. Talk about a guy who we're going to assume didn't actually love where he was so much, because he left in the offseason. Shohei Ohtani signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Obviously, that 10-year, $700 million deal that's incredibly deferred. But he made his regular season return to Angel Stadium for the first time last night. Dodgers take down the Angels 6-2. Ohtani had one hit. He got I think it was an RBI triple. Here, they did not do anything special before the game to recognize Shohei Ohtani. And this is the Angels, and it feels a little dumb, if you ask me. So they didn't, I don't think they put out an official statement on this, but they did kind of confirm there were no plans ahead of the game to do anything special. They did put up a graphic on the video board when he came for his first at bat, and somebody on the Angels beat pointed out they were reminded that the Angels did a video for him at spring training the first time the Dodgers came to face the Angels in spring training. Did the Angels handle this wrong?
Yeah, absolutely they did. You're talking about a guy who won not just one, but two American League MVPs for you over the last couple seasons. Yeah, come on. You did this absolutely wrong. I will say this, and I mentioned this on the show the other day. I was at that Angels home opener, and when they did show, you know, the pump up, the hype video of, you know, getting ready for the season, Ohtani was in there because, of course, he won the MVP. Every time Ohtani went on the screen, Angels fans booed. I don't understand that, Angels fans. If you're listening, go ahead. You're pointing your boos at the wrong person. It should not be at Shohei Ohtani. It should be at the ownership group of the Angels, who did not offer Shohei Ohtani a contract to stay with the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah, that's the part that blows my mind, right? Like he came in 6 years, he played out his contract. He was not given a long-term contract offer by the Angels. He was extended a qualifying offer, which we knew he would decline. It was for less than his deal was that he was making last year, right? So he turned that down, went to free agency, and he confirmed this week in a very Japanese way, they did not offer him a long-term contract. It's not that he turned down the Angels. He literally did not have the opportunity to select them when free agency started. So I really don't understand that move by Angels fans to boo Ohtani. Boo Art Marino. He's the one that did that wrong, not Ohtani. But either way.
He got the last laugh, though. He got intentionally walked in the end of the game, and then Mookie Betts hits a home run to walk it off. Well, not walk it off, they're away, but to win the game.
Yeah.
I mean, Shohei Ohtani got the last laugh. You're gonna walk the 700 million guy so the 350 million guy can hit a home run behind it. I mean, pick your poison, but either way.
Let me get this straight. We're gonna walk the two-time MVP so we can face the one-time MVP and not hopefully get him out before we have to face the other one-time MVP behind him. Okay, cool.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, you gotta pick your poison. I will say this for the Angels. They did kind of make that feel like a playoff atmosphere, so I'll give them props to that. But it's also kind of hilarious that that was their Super Bowl or World Series, I should say. But that's really all they've had this year. So shout out to them for making it a playoff experience. But I think all you did was just wake up a sleeping giant of the Dodgers. And I think that's going to make them even more tough moving down the stretch. So good luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, though, I did like what the Angels' young core did in this game. Logan Ohapi, the catcher, homered. Zach Neto went 2-for-4 with a stolen base. Ben Joyce had a scoreless eighth inning back when it was still a little bit close there. Miles. Yeah, Reed Detmers had a quality start. Like, I think this team, if a lot of things break their way, has the pieces to eventually contend for a wild card spot. But again, Art Marino is the problem there more so than anything else. Okay, let's get to quick pitch. A lot of stuff to get into in quick pitch. The first thing was the Orioles were facing the White Sox. Eloy Jimenez comes up with the bases loaded, and I'm like, man, it's been an awful season for the White Sox, and they're about to give up a grand slam to Eloy Jimenez, and somehow it was even worse than that.
Yeah, and the truth is, if you have great stuff, you can challenge over the white part of the plate a little bit more and let your stuff just play. If you don't, you better figure out.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. The White Sox have just gone full White Sox.
For those of you on audio, what a great call. The White Sox have gone full White Sox. For those of you on audio, while the color guy is just telling us random story during a play, Eloy hits a shallow pop up to the left field line. And three guys run in to get it, shortstop, third baseman, left fielder. One of them pulls off. Two of them collide with each other. Ball hits the ground and rolls away. Kind of an embarrassing baseball play. The next time Eloy was up, and I don't think this was intentional, but the next time Eloy was up, he hit a ground ball. I think it was the third base. And the throw to the first baseman just whiffed on it, completely missed it. It hits Eloy in the helmet. At this point, do we need to just shut down the White Sox for the rest of the year for the safety of the rest of the league and the players? Like, is this a safety concern? Is it like going to a senior citizen and taking away their driver's license because they just can't drive anymore without killing somebody? Do we have to just shut down the White Sox completely?
They might at least go get their eyes and ears checked for sure. And this has been quite a stretch for the White Sox. It's almost impressive how bad they've been. Shout out to Kevin Brown on that. On that call, though, that was hilarious. Oh, that he's one of my favorite announcers, and that just proves the reason why. But I didn't know it was this bad, Lindsay. And I tweeted this out last night. Let me update the stats a little bit based on the extra loss they had. But the White Sox are now 4-38 4-38 since the All-Star break. They have to, now they have to go 12-10 and the record. They have to go the rest of the way if they want to avoid not having most losses in a season. That would put them at 119 losses if they go 12-10 the rest of the way. There is no way that they're getting 12 more wins on the season. No way. We are about to see history, folks. We're about to see the most losses in a season, and we might see it. We might see it be shattered at this point.
Yeah, it's just patently absurd here. This is awful. Also absurd, Kyle Schwarber was in the middle of a slump. Philly's on the road in Toronto trying to push to get the best record in the National League. He hits three home runs, including, I think, a three-run homer in the ninth to give Philly the lead in their 10-9 victory over the Toronto Blue Jays. Absolutely wild game. Solely needed for Schwarber. Funny story here. I'm in a very competitive redraft league, and I am trying to hold on to the number one seed. I was this close to benching Kyle Schwarber for yesterday's game. And one of my other outfielders got a random day off. And so I put him back in the lineup like an hour before the game started and obviously got the three home runs out of it. So baseball gods smiled on me yesterday on that one, but just a giant night. And then the Blue Jays aren't technically eliminated from the postseason, but a couple teams are. The Colorado Rockies are now officially eliminated with that loss to the Braves. The Miami Marlins are officially eliminated with their loss to Washington, the Washington Nationals. They lost to Patrick Corbin, which should tell you something. Which of these is, I'm not going to say more surprising, because I think we didn't expect much out of Colorado, but what should we feel about the Marlins going from a postseason team last year to eliminated on September 3rd this year?
Yeah, I feel bad for the Marlins fans. I really do, because what they had last year, they were building something great. And then you go to this season and you start off terrible. You have like the worst starting that you've ever had. You get rid of your franchise player, Jazz Chisholm Jr., only to watch him just tear it up in the Yankees. And the only reason you don't have him anymore is because you couldn't agree on a couple $100,000 of arbitration money, which sounds like nothing in comparison to what he's doing right now in the field. You're going to probably walk away from Skip Schumacher, who I think is a great manager.
Manager of the year.
Yeah, last season. So, yeah, you got to really feel for what Miami's doing. I will say I'm excited for the future of the Marlins team if they do it right, because for the first time in what seems like forever, it looks like they finally made the right trades, at least the returns, I should say. I don't agree with the trades they made, but the returns they got were at least respectable. But either way, I'm very disappointed to see that the Marlins are not playing competitive baseball this month.
Yeah, I will say, I don't think last season for the Miami Marlins, I don't think they really were a typical postseason team last year. I think that was a little bit, I'm not going to say fraudulent. I've used that terminology in the past, but their run differential, they scored 666 runs, which should tell you something. They allowed 723, but they made the postseason because they were 33-14 in one run games, which is just an absurdly, like, it's a winning percentage over 700. Their winning percentage as a whole was 519. And if you make that a normal winning percentage in one-run games, they're a 500 team. So it was a little bit fluky. I'm going to go with fluky. I do think tearing it down was the right thing to do. I kind of disagree on the decision to trade Jazz Chisholm, but I do think tearing it down was the right thing to do. And like you said, I feel like for the first time in a while, they actually got some decent players back, and we can see what happens going forward. Another team with some decent players, Lawrence Butler of the Oakland A's, tied the franchise record with an extra base hit in 8 consecutive games. I mentioned the Angels core, the young core earlier. Are the A's starting to build a little bit of a core too with Zach Gelof at second, Jacob Wilson at short, Shea Langeliers behind the plate, the potential of Tyler Soderstrom at behind the plate and at first base, and Lawrence Butler in the outfield, and JJ Bleday?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that's going to be a fun thing to watch. Now, we're talking about two owners that are not the best for baseball. So who knows how long they'll actually last and be a core. I'm surprised that the Athletics actually kept what they had at the trade deadline. And then you have Mason Miller as well, sitting in your bullpen. the rotation of the A's still gives me question marks, but it's the same thing with the Angels as well. But you got to love what these Athletics young bats are doing. Lawrence Butler just came out of nowhere. He won the Player of the Week award last week, and now doing what he's doing right now. And most of those consecutive extra base hits have been home runs as well. Mm-hmm. You got to really like that. So especially since, you know, half of his games next year are going to be in a minor league park.
Yeah, that's definitely going to help goose their numbers. People are going to be wanting them in fantasy. Okay, speaking of young players, Jackson Churio homered again. While Paul Skeens went five solid innings there. Jackson Merrill was off. He did not have a game for the Padres. But it feels like, I mean, he's the favorite for an NL Rookie of the Year. Skeens is behind them. Can Churio chase them down and make this a three-player race? Or is this a Merrill versus Skeens for the Rookie of the Year?
Last time I looked, and I'm not going to name the betting site because, you know, that's how that works here until someone gives us a ring. But
no free pub.
Yep. Right now, Jackson Churio is at plus 2,000 for Rookie of the Year. It's actually a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. I think, I'm not a betting person, but I think if you were interested, and this is not betting advice, if you're interested in giving Jackson Churio a run for your money, I think it might not be a bad little deal because the way that he has been hitting the ball right now, he has an 857 slug in the last seven games, 656 slug in the last 15. And it's just been incredible. I think, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, I think because he's an everyday player, I think that's going to help him out a little bit down the stretch. If he keeps this up, I think it's a battle of the Jacksons when it's all said and done. Paul Skeens will finish third in Rookie of the Year when it's all said and done. I'm going to go on that limb and say it.
The Pirates would love for that to happen simply so that he doesn't accrue a full year of service time in that first year. Because that's the difference in when he would hit free agency, assuming they don't extend him. That would be the difference there. Talking about young players, real quick before we go, Wyatt Langford has not had the season he wanted, 111 games here, batting only .243 this year with OPS over like under 700. But hit his 10th homer of the year last night. It was a walk-off grand slam against the New York Yankees off of course, Clay Holmes. It's a lost season for the Rangers. I don't really have much as far as analysis on this goes. It was a great moment in a season where he's struggled a little bit, you know, with playing time, with consistency. But I do think that the Rangers, it feels like, have the pieces with some better health. A lot of better health. They had a lot of injuries this year. It feels like they have the pieces to make a run again next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do have the pieces to do that. I think we're just getting a little bit of a World Series hangover. They dealt with some injuries in their pitching rotation. So I think they can definitely turn it around pretty quickly. And that AL West, I mean, we saw how fast the Astros caught up to the Mariners. It's not like it's the most tough division right now. So I would not be surprised to see the Rangers back in it. I will say this, but Clay Holmes stat, you know, Thomas Nesico at TJ Stats on Twitter. I mean, he's worth the plug. So go ahead and follow him on socials. It's really worth it. He put something out this morning and said that Clay Holmes threw 64% of sinkers in his outing yesterday. And that is, it was his worst pitch. And he still went out and did that. I don't know what's going on with this Clay Holmes. I really don't know what's going on. And I don't understand why they're continuing to put him out in the ninth inning, even though it is still happening time and time after again. He has the most blown saves, I think. I think he's second most in Yankees history. They got to figure that out if they want to make... They're in second place in the AL East right now. The Orioles took him over. And, you know, going into September and your closer having issues like that, not the best thing to have. Not the best thing to have, Lindsay.
It feels like that potentially could be the downfall or the waste of Juan Soto's only guaranteed year there in New York. I will say, though, the other thing that the Yankees got wrong is when they expanded rosters on Sunday, rather than calling up Jason Dominguez, who at the time was batting .313 with an .870 OPS in the minors, they called up Duke Ellis, a pinch runner, over Jason Dominguez. I don't know why. It's not a service time manipulation thing. He was on the Major League IL for a while, so it's not a service time manipulation thing. It just, for some reason, it's almost like they don't want to, they just refuse to take Alex Verdugo out of the starting lineup, and that feels like a giant mistake. And I think if the Yankees season ends up ending prematurely, they're going to make the postseason, obviously, but if they don't make the deep run everybody expects behind the duo of Judge and Soto with Cole on the mound for your postseason opener, it feels like it's going to be because of some combination of Clay Holmes being shaky in the bullpen and Verdugo playing like crap when Jason Dominguez could give you a much more potential or much has the potential to give you much more production from that spot. So interesting moves for the Yankees here to kind of stick with some veterans down the stretch and not go to some other options.
I'll add one more to that mix. Not only do I think it's the Verdugo thing, I think you could add Trent Grisham to that. They're kind of platooning back and forth. If the stats could translate, if they would translate, against righties this year, Jason Dominguez has a 937 OPS. He's batting .331 batting average against righties. Now against lefties, he's only a 204, 521 OPS. Okay. That is still better than Trent Grisham on both splits. compared to MLB. Now it's MLB to AAA stats, so let's keep that in mind. Right.
There is a difference there. No, yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
If it translates, but it's still better than Trent Grisham's on both splits, and it's only about 20 points lower in batting average and about 60 points lower in OPS against lefties compared to Verdugo. He crushes, he clears against right-handers. It is 100% worth calling him up and taking him over for one of those two veterans, but they're not going to do it. I don't understand why.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, September 4th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. New YouTube channel for this. We're trying to grow this a little bit. We have some big things planned for the future on that. But until next time, this has been First Pitch.